goes. This is the council meeting of, what's the date again? September 17th, 2019. Would you join me in the pledge?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mayor Strumberg, Councilor Slattery.
Present.
Graham.
Here.
Akins.
Here.
Seffinger. Rosenthal.
Here.
Jensen.
Here.
Okay. I have to remember that I'm mayor's announcements. Be kind to the substitute teacher. The city of Ashland currently has vacancies on the Airport Commission, Citizens Budget Committee, Forest Lands Commission, Transportation Commission, and Tree Commission. If you are interested in volunteering to serve on a city commission, please contact the city recorder's office or visit the city website at ashland.or.us for information and application procedures. City Administrator's report.
Okay, so I just wanted to brief the council. The council has been receiving lots of emails about Clay Street, and I just wanted to let the audience know what the status of that was and what we're doing there. And it's actually on tonight's agenda, so I may be stealing a little bit of Scott Fleury's thunder, but I just wanted to let you know that for clarity, that road, Middle Clay, is owned by Jackson County. It's under the Jackson County jurisdiction. And so they are applying for a grant to improve that road to city standards, and then we would take it over. And that's kind of how jurisdictional exchanges work. County brings it up to city standards, and then we would agree to take it. And so we're supporting their grant application with the Metropolitan Planning Organization, the MPO. And so I, as evidenced by the numerous emails that you received, I think there is resounding support for that project. And those emails will all be collated and given to the county to add to the grant application.
Very nice. It's an impressive effort.
Yes.
It is on the consent agenda, so. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. There you go. Thank you. Okay. So the other thing I wanted to let you know, and you all know this, but just, and this is, probably don't need to say these things because there's an audience here, but not the viewing audience. Yesterday's meeting was canceled because we had some counselors that were out of town. We would have had a quorum, but I think the issue of City Hall and the discussion about City Hall was important enough that I think it was felt that it would be better to cancel that. That will be, that meeting, that agenda item will be moved to September 30th. The September 30th study session where we will take up the City Hall. And then finally, I just wanted to check in with you. We have, as you know, we have a budget committee vacancy, and we had two candidates, and I just wanted to remind you, if you haven't met with the candidates, if you want to schedule meetings with those candidates, please let me know as soon as possible. And that's all.
Letting you know if you want to schedule meetings.
If you want us to help schedule those meetings, we can, but you don't have to.
Okay.
If you want to schedule them yourselves, that's absolutely fine. But if you would like any assistance, we can eliminate and help schedule those meetings.
I think just
there's
okay, next is approval of minutes. Any corrections?
I'm trying to remember what your title is here. It's
not Mayor Pro Tem. I usually say Your Honor. Your Honor Pro Tem, I move approval of the minutes.
A second?
Moved and seconded. Everybody in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. So now we come to special presentations and awards. Sort of the quiet version for those of you that wanted to get the word out into the public. But we are very active and interested group. And what we have here is an annual presentation by the Airport Commission, which I understand is about 15 minutes long, if that, but you don't have to take it all, followed by options for helping residents of Ashland. So that's 15, and about 5 minutes we're going to give to the Ashland Culture of Peace Commission at the end of all that. Take it away.
Good evening, Pro Temp Mayor, Council. I'm Scott Fleury, the Deputy Public Works Director, and with me tonight is Pat Hertklotz, one of our newer members to the Airport Commission. She is filling in for David Wolski, the Chair of the Commission. And I'm going to turn it over to her and let her go through her presentation, and then we can answer any questions at the end if you have
any. I am the newest member, and I'm honored to be making the presentation tonight. I'll highlight the report that you have that you can look at later. The airport master plan, we use Century West and revised and prepared master plan that the FAA needs if they're going to authorize funding through the airport improvement grant program. So we're glad to have that moving along. Can you hear me okay?
You're doing great.
Hangars. Airplanes need hangars. We've had hangars that were rented out, for 25 years, there were tenants who got to use the hangars. Now they've all come back to the city. They are rented. They're bringing in money to the airport and the city. So this is a good shift. We have a fueling terminal. It's a self-serve thing, and it's been upgraded, so there now can be fueling any time of the day, any day of the week. So that's a nice piece. For landscaping, we have a plan created for the improvement and maintenance, encouraging riparian restoration on Immigrant and Neal Creeks. And xeriscaping is being looked at for water and maintenance consideration. That certainly, to me as an Ashlander, really feels very appropriate. We have Ashland fiber optics now extended all the way to the airport terminal, so that's usage that's going to be attractive to guests. The airport maintenance plan, we have city staff and commission looking for policies and schedules that'll be for the grounds and the building maintenance. That would be things like weed control, irrigation, signage, maintenance. It's nice to have that getting organized. For airport security, a big tip of the hat to Skinner Aviation. They have provided for the terminal and maintenance hangars. And now there's going to be a city-owned security camera. We've got the fiber optics set up, and we're looking for the right camera. It's going to sit way up at the top and look all around so that we can be recording any activity. The last discussion also included probably needing gates on the entrance roads. Somebody just drove in recently to complain about a helicopter, and that kind of woke me up anyway, that anybody could just drive on in and do all kinds of things. That's not very secure. For trees, you obviously need them trimmed for the safety of landing and approaches. So there's been some trimming of the trees, but now we're waiting for the birds to finish their nesting season, and then we'll finish trimming the trees. Communications, the commission has endorsed the plan that clarifies how all the airport participants will be communicating with one another. Hopefully that will eliminate some confusion and mistakes in the past. We've had a lot of deferred maintenance, so I'm happy to report that we're getting caught up. Roofs have been repaired that were leaking. We've remodeled the terminal restrooms. There's a new water fountain. We've repaired hangar doors. There's improved grounds maintenance. And there's actually been talk about putting a mural somewhere which would fit in with community city art. So that's an exciting piece, and we're looking at how to possibly do that and not incur costs. But we also don't want an artist to not be paid for their work. Airport Appreciation Day was just wonderful, and so now I get to do a little visual aid here. Thanks to Larry Cogdell and Richard Josephson at Aerotech Videos. Here you get to see the demonstration that was being done on the water drops.
Can we have Scott do the sound?
And you could see that from all over Airport Day, so it was a very effective demonstration. And it gives us a nice overview of the airport going through here. So there were 1,500 guests at Airport Days, and they were all ages. There were activities for the children to engage with things related to aircraft. There was a flight simulator they could go in, thanks to the Youth Museum. And there were demonstrations not only of the water drop, but also of aerial rescue. So we had Mercy Flight out there. There were flights available for people to take. It really was a lovely day. The weather was nice. It wasn't baking us all. So we're looking forward to doing that again. Here you see some of the other helicopters coming in and use of the runway. So it was a lovely, busy day. Just a great showing off the asset of our city. Huzzah to the city staff and the volunteers that all helped make that happen. A lot of folks that created that. So as I speak of that, we would like to thank the city staff support, Chance Metcalf, Scott Fleury, Kayla Cathall, and members of the commission who have finished their terms. That's Lincoln Z and Susan Moen. And of course, we lost Bill Skillman. We need two more full commission members. If you know any women pilots, I would love to get one of them on the commission. I'm just the daughter of two pilots. My mother soloed in 1940. So I know she's smiling down at my work here now. We are looking forward to a master plan that'll look 10 years ahead into the future. We will continue to have our awareness of our carbon footprint. Perhaps our facilities can be used for generating solar energy. Parts of the Ashlands alternative energy vision. Continuing that riparian restoration. And that's our two creeks, but I know we've been trying to do that all along the Ashland border, so that feels really positive. We'd like to be part of the emergency preparedness and response with infrastructure, working with the FAA so that there's funding, and encouraging links with local businesses. I could really see encouraging packages where people could fly in, tie down at our hangars, go to some plays, or do a Sierra Club or one of the Northwest Nature Center's hikes and enjoy our beautiful environment. Stay at one of our inns or hotels, make it a whole package. And I know that we have a liaison to Chamber of Commerce, so I'll be supporting that. We are glad that the airport can continue as a self-supporting city asset. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
This might be for Scott or possibly Kelly. So the camera installation or activation out there, does that fall under the umbrella of city policy, or is it its own separate piece relative to airport security?
So right now the airport is a general aviation airport, so it's generally unsecured overall. When Pat mentioned, you know, fencing and gating, it's not typically required of a general aviation airport, but it's not. You can move forward and do those types of applications, securing with fencing and video camera monitoring. Specifically, we've had incidents in the past of stolen fuel and then people driving on the runway and using the runway as a racetrack and kicking up what we call FOD, foreign object debris, on the runway, which presents a significant safety issue. And then you have businesses with a significant amount of equipment and investments of equipment on site that rely on kind of a secure environment. So I'm not fully familiar with the city policy per se. I think the city administrator can talk about that. But the FAA would support any sort of secure environment specifically for a general aviation airport itself.
So if the FAA doesn't require a camera, then I think it would fall under the city policy. And I'll just get with Scott and we can talk about that camera and bring that forward to the city council.
And I think people are more mindful of security since 9/11. I just think all airports were shut down at first. And I think continuing to make it a more secure place is really good.
Just a quick comment. I have friends who took their children out to Airport Appreciation Day, and they told me what an incredible event it was, and that they really appreciated the value of the airport to the city once they did that. And so I think it's a really important event to continue to do to connect people to the airport.
Great.
Thank you for your work. You guys do a really great job. Really,
thank you.
I know it's a labor of love for the Airport Commission, but at the same time, it's really well done.
It's really a gem, and I think we can do more to have more people enjoying it. So I'm looking forward to working on the commission.
The mural. Will it be a mural that you see from above?
No, it was going to be to greet people coming in. But that's a good idea. with solar technology.
Thank you. And next up, the mighty options for helping residents of Ashland.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Your honor is enough.
Before Michelle and I start, let me introduce two board members who are here tonight. Jackie Bachman, no stranger to this room, and Matt Intress. We have a board of 11, and it's good to see our supporters. So, hey, you got several.
I know. You only sat in the whole place.
Before we start, let me just say what a pleasure it is to have an AURA Executive Director, Michelle Arellano, started not quite 6 months ago, and the place is already different. And I thought maybe just a second or two of introduction, because she has quite a background. So,
thank you.
Michelle.
Thank you. I'm grateful to be a part of Ashland now. I moved here about a month ago. I was in Medford for about 8 months before that, and in Southern California before that. About 25 years experience with Boys and Girls Clubs. Very passionate about serving those most in need. And so coming to AURA, it just transferred the mission to working with a lot of adults that have some needs. And CEO for a lot of the years, I was on national staff for Boys and Girls Club of America as a director of organizational development for about 5 years and worked with about 30 organizations, so I could really see small Boys and Girls Clubs to larger, and some of the clubs that thrived and some of them that challenged more, and a lot of kind of the variables around that. Coming here to Southern Oregon and seeing the posting, I interviewed with the board, and I shared this with a lot of you that I met with, but I think it's important to say is I was so impressed with the organization and what they were able to do. Such a small staff and a small board, and they had great impact, and it's because they have big hearts and a big passion to make a difference. And so it's a real honor to be a part of the team, and been learning so much since April, and just really grateful to be a part of the community.
It's good to have her. It's good to have her. She's already hired two new employees, interviewed four, hired two, and that doubles her size. So, and she's got more coming. Thank you for the invitation tonight to talk a little bit about the Ashland Winter Shelter. We want to focus on the winter shelter. It will be here in 6 weeks or so. Just a couple of slides on last year because we haven't really reported out what we did last year. The funding ended June the 30th. It's July 1st to June 30th. So this is what happened last year. You'll remember we had 12 community partners. It's a huge community collaborative with 240 volunteers and 12 organizations. It was 154 nights from mid-November to mid-April. It rotated between four different churches over seven nights. And I should really call out these churches because they did a yeoman's job. The First Presbyterian Church was three nights. Trinity Episcopal Church was two nights. United Methodist Church was one night. And the Rogue Valley Unitarian University Universal Unitarian Fellowship was one night. And each one of them really had a lot of challenging serving that community in their fellowship hall during those nights. Also last year, Aura operated the Extreme Weather Warming Center for 11 nights while the other winter shelter was going on simultaneously. So there's some firsts of the winter of 2018-19. First time ever, and the winter shelter goes back for a dozen years, first time ever all seven nights were covered. We had winter shelter for seven nights. First time ever we had a extreme weather warming center and a winter shelter running simultaneously. And the first time ever that the city had case management, wraparound case management for the shelter guests. And so that's what I want to spend just a little bit of time on this second slide of last year. We screened 135 homeless with a vulnerability test. We offered a shelter reservation for the 99 most vulnerable. The obvious question, what happened to the other 36? We know for a fact that many of them were housed at the Kelly Shelter in Medford, which had a lot bigger occupancy than we had. Of the 99, the demographics are interesting. 32 women, 67 men. Almost two-thirds were chronic homeless, meaning they had been homeless for more than a year. Age range, 18 to 77. The big success story of last year for an individual was the 77-year-old. He is now in an assisted living center in Eagle Point. But thanks to our navigator, Crystal, who got him a Medicaid bed, and I could go on, Michelle could go on quite some time talking about this success. Everybody put two thumbs up on it. 35 people were 50 years and older of the 99. Case management results, by the way, case management was offered to all 135. Anybody who was screened had case management available to them, and all the data was entered through a homeless management information system. 19 found housing, and I think the next one statistic might even be more important, and that is that 33 additional people filled out all the necessary paperwork for a low-income or subsidized housing request. So if they will stay with us, if they'll be patient, over time, those requests will come valid, will be vested. 45 secured Oregon health plan, 55 secured supplemental nutritionist food stamps, 7 people found temporary jobs, 10 people found permanent employment. The jobs and employment were not part of the HMIS system, so we need to do a little better record keeping there. Those are approximate numbers. But all told, 1,300 services to those 135 people. So we feel good about that. That's last year. What's this year? So, let me finish by last year. I guess I forgot this slide's next. So if you take the winter shelter, the top row, you just saw all those results. And you add to it the results from the resource center and the laundry shower trailer and the warming center, you can see in the housing program last year, we found housing for 61 families that were previously unhoused. We protected 129 families from eviction. They had eviction notices or utility shutoff notices. And we provided temporary housing shelter for 139 individuals. That's the housing program. On the job match program, 42 successes, temporary job successes, and 37 individuals got a permanent job. Total of over 4,000 individual services. So that's my bragging about last year. Now, this year.
So, you know, one of the things that I think that's important to talk about, too, is the wraparound services. And so we call our staff, our case managers, navigators, which I think is a really cool name for what they do, because they literally help people navigate through systems for them to help to stabilize their lives, from a birth certificate to an ID to a mailing address at the resource center, to health benefits, to housing, to jobs. And the gentleman that Ken was talking about, I mean, literally working with him, and he was chronically homeless before he went into the shelter and had hearing issues and also mental health needed assistance in that area. And you could hear every time he came in to meet with Crystal, because he'd always lose his hearing aids, she'd be yelling at the top of her lungs so he could hear her. And she got close to getting him into housing before, and it slipped through the cracks. She couldn't get him in, and she just was consistent in working with him. And he moved to a really vulnerable place, that if he wasn't placed in housing, there was probably something that was going to happen, because he was having a hard time taking care of himself. And so the win of that consistency from the time that the shelter opened all the way until a few weeks ago for him to finally be housed. She followed up with a phone call this week and to check on him, and he's doing well. He likes having his own bedroom and his own bed. And he said the people are nice there to him, and they're also recommending him for further evaluation, because he even needs greater assistance, which he's going to get. So incredible success story of being able to provide the wraparound services. And so a lot of what we've been talking about lately is you know, teaching people to fish, you know, and to be able to work with them so they can provide some stability in their lives and be able to be self-sufficient. And that is Aura's whole reason for being, which I think the board really did a great job. They kind of went one way at one point and came back around to another way and saying, really what we're about is crisis to stability. And that's the reason for being for us, from the laundry shower trailer to the resource center to the winter shelter. And that case management services wrap around all of the programs that we offer. And so we're really excited this year to be in one location for the winter shelter. We've already had quite a few planning meetings with our incredible volunteer group, of course, Heidi Parker, who's been instrumental in the shelter from the beginning, and Ken and Jackie and myself, and really gearing up and getting the facility ready. So it'll be from November to the end of March. The permit process was quite an incredible process in itself, and I want to give a special thank you to Kelly Manning and all of her assistants in helping us maneuver through all of that, and Kim holding the tail of it as it was maneuvering through the whole process. And to finally have that is a big win for us. It's going to make it so much more efficient, and I think just a better experience all the way around for our guests and for all of our volunteers. So we have the 3-year lease, and our occupancy is 49 beds, and so we'll have 4 hosts, and we'll have 45 guests. We're going to start the screening the end of this month. We've already done a couple pre-screening, because people are coming in and looking to be a part of the shelter. We'll have a full-time shelter director, which we're really close to hiring. We were really close a couple other times, and they were so good that they got offered more money, so one didn't leave and one got snatched up by another amazing big nonprofit in this community. I won't say the name. So we're back to the drawing board, but we're interviewing right now and have a couple great candidates in the works. Also a full-time navigator. And we'll be paying for transportation. So that's what's unique about this site too, is we need to provide transportation. And that's a part of the lease agreement as well. Right now, the funding that we have through Access, who I have to just say, they've been amazing to work with, and Pam Noor has just been incredible since I've started and really helped me learn a lot more about the community. $150,000, and putting the budget together, the budget's closer to $267,000. And that really isn't any fluff. I mean, that's still having volunteer night hosts. It's still really using the volunteer pool. It's having the churches do some warming food to give people snacks at night and snacks in the morning. And but the big piece that's most important to us is the navigators and that wraparound services to really help people move to stability. And you can see the results that Ken showed from last year. Just think about what the results are going to be this year. I mean, we even have more time under our belt and more people that we'll continue to work with from last year. So we feel that the numbers are even going to increase when it comes to housing and jobs and essential services. So we are looking for an additional $150,000. I get to talk about the numbers. And so one of the things that we're really looking at too as an organization and is a priority for the board is really people understanding who Aura is. So a lot of people, you know the laundry shower trailer, or they know the Ashland Community Resource Center, or they know the Ashland Winter Shelter, but they don't really know that that's all Aura. So we're really working to have everything brand as Aura. So again, these case management wraparound services. Right now, the Resource Center, our budget's right around $200,000. We've secured $142,000. We're still out raising 63, and so we're also at that stage as an organization. We're kind of a tween, you know. We're growing, and we're needing more infrastructure, administration, and policies and procedures, and getting audit ready. And so that takes a little bit more staff. And so we're kind of taking that leap, really, because what's so important to me and the board of directors is that we're here decades after we're not here anymore, that the organization can continue to sustain itself. And so we're looking to find another $63,000 to help fund that. The winter shelter, not secured yet, is $117,000. And I already talked about the budget there. We do have the funding secured for the laundry shower trailer, the administrative support, and the fund development support. And so really, I think, when it comes to dollars and what we're able to do, because we have so many volunteers helping us, helping the organization at such a high level, that the cost of this, from what I've seen for other organizations, isn't that crazy. And so we've been on the trail, the fundraising trail, to really look to find the funding to make sure we can continue to provide the services that really make a difference.
But let me say something about the funding. The city has been very instrumental in funding financial support of Aura from day one. I mean, from day one, the city provided the initial seed money with us and Access that started Aura. And every year we've gotten some support through the social services grant process, and it's very appreciated. And the city has been more than helpful with the staff in helping us. But this shelter doubles our size. It doubles our involvement. And we're going to need the same level of city financial support proportionally with the shelter that we've received with the Resource Center. We have an ability to go to nonprofits and go to our donors and get program support. It's very hard to get capacity building, and that's the stage we're in. So we are struggling to get these funds. As it stands right now, the shelter runs out of money about the end of January, and we'll still have February and March to operate it. So we don't quite know how this is all going to work yet. Last year we took some money out of our general fund, which was designated for the Resource Center. We don't have that much money in the general fund to fund the shelter much past January. So We are asking for support everywhere we go. We've talked with Pam Marsh. We've talked with Jeff Golden. We called the county and talking with them. We're talking with our donors. We're talking with you. Help. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions, comments? Thank you for your work. It's been a great development to have the shelter this year. It's going to be both interesting and challenging, but we're certainly up to it. Welcome to our community, Michelle. Michelle, all of a sudden, I hope I got that right. Just be my luck. I'm starting to get names wrong up here. But thank you for your work. And we heard your message.
Are there ways
that individuals can donate?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have over 300 donors, and we'll be going to them later in the fall of this year, asking for another donation drive. But a lot of those donations go to the Resource Center. The shelter is a whole new kettle of fish that we need to fund. So we're talking to Linda Reed. We're talking to the city about ways that we might be tapping into some funding. But we're going to need some help. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now for the Ashland Culture of Peace Commission to talk to us about. You have something coming up this weekend.
The magic.
A little something coming up this weekend.
You just saw the show.
Yeah.
That's backwards.
Well, I guess there we go. Good evening. David Wick here, Ashland Cultural Peace Commission, the Executive Director, and
I'm Kai. I'm a co-founder and also a Director of Development. Good evening.
Yes, so you came to show you your investment in the Ashland Coastal Peace Commission and also the Ashland Global Peace Conference, which is coming up this weekend, give you some highlights on how we got to where we are right now, which is very exciting and with the high impact that's coming up. So just want to give you an idea as to some of the foundations that we've laid with your support. So to begin with, the Ashland Coastal Peace Commission, let me just give some highlights as we go here. The Ashland Coastal Peace Commission is founded as a local global initiative. That's really important. It's founded from the very beginning as a local global initiative with a focus on personal and systemic change. The practical application of building sustainable peace is a focus. We build trusted relationships with the city, police, and local nonprofits as a catalyst to bringing the concept of the culture of peace forward. We provide the practical applications to bring the community into practicing the culture of peace. To foster the culture of peace by educating and uplifting the community for better well-being. If you recall, May of 2017, many of you were part of the proclamation creating Ashland as a city of peace and joining the International Cities of Peace, which helps create a framework that we're working with, an umbrella that you've said, this is where we want to go, this is the direction that we're going in. Again, you may remember, this was January of 2017 with the Women's March, which was set up as an anti. The organizers came to us and said, we want our support, and we said, we'll help you organize it, but we do values. Worked with them. The shift was to a positive approach, to be inclusivity, and to be pro moving forward. It was very successful, as you recall. Over 8,000 people were here in Ashland. It was a tremendously positive experience all around. We also work with our friends over here. We're one of the community partners. And with the Ashland Coast Peace Commission, we do outreach to recruit volunteers and do training of the volunteers and do support throughout the year. And it's a delight to be working together. We also have the what's known as the talking circle. And this is people come together every week and going into some very deep subjects in an hour and in a very safe place, a place that people are heard and also can really express themselves in a very safe arena.
And last year, thank you for your support, and we installed the World Peace Flame at the Tholthy Pavilion. And on the International Day of Peace 2018, which is last year, and we installed the World Peace Flame, and this is the lighting ceremony. So we have the oldest living Takuma tribe elder to start the flame. So she held the flame and passed to all the city officials and stuck.
Adam. Wait. There you go. Thank you. He's got the magic hand.
So, the flame from Grandma Aggie going through the city officials and the president of SOU to the middle school children, because this is across the street from the middle school. And the middle school children has volunteered to be the flame keeper. What that means is that every Friday, they go across the street to fill this lamp with biomass oil, rain or shine, without missing any week at all during the school year. And when the flame keeper graduate from middle school, they move on to high school. Here they are teaching the next incoming class to be flame keepers. So this World Peace Flame in Ashland and all the World Peace Flame in the world is an eternal flame. And these flame keepers are perpetual. Every class, as they move into high school, the next class come in and they learn about really upholding, dedicated to keep the peace flame going, and they are peace keepers. And in April, I was invited to the Senate chamber to give an invocation inspired by the World Peace Flame. So I gave an invocation for all the senators.
And there he is, Chief O'Meara. And we worked with Chief O'Meara, and it's a national program of police to peace. And as you've seen, they have the peace officer designation on the police vehicles. And it is a way of communicating about, you know, it's about community police relationships, but it's a subtle way, it's a subtle message. However, I also know the story of one of your police officers who said with one of the key people that came down from Oregon, from Portland, to learn about this because they wanted to bring it up to Portland, and did a photo op near one of the cruisers, and this gentleman from Portland asked the police officer, well, how are you interacting with the community, and what differences makes? He says, well, there's some. but I see my job differently now. Before, I saw my job as tamping down problems. Now I see myself as promoting peace. And just that right there is an important awareness and shift. So Irene and I were invited to the United Nations in March of this year to report on what the Ashland Coastal Peace Commission is doing here and also about the World Peace Plan. We had gotten news about what we're doing and wanted to learn about it, which was very, you know, we had a great presentation that we did, and we also were invited by Ambassador Chaudhry right here, we had a private meeting with him. And he is the former Under Secretary General and High Representative of the United Nations, former President of the Security Council, and also the former founder of the Global Movement of Cultural Peace. Was that a noise? Was it a time thing?
That was the noise that came from somewhere we don't know where.
Oh, okay. It wasn't direct. But anyhow, he is so impressed with what we're doing here in Ashland, moving towards the culture of peace, doing all the different things that we're doing, and about the World Peace Plan, and the students being Flintfields, he said, I want to come to Ashland to learn about this. When can we do that? That's what this is. He said, great, let's do it. September 21st, this next Saturday, is the International Day of Peace. He's coming here. We have other outstanding people who are coming in. We have Dr. Yang coming. He's the Vice President of the United States Institute of Peace. We have Dr. Saul Arbess, who's the Director of the Canadian Peace Initiative, coming to find out what's happening here. And with our leaders, you may know about the program, our leaders talking about personal commitment to the peace and to the betterment of all people, leading to a culture of peace. So this is what is, he's coming here to learn about this, and it's incredible that he's going to be here on this is the 20th anniversary of the founding of the Global Movement for a Culture of Peace, and he's going to be here in Ashland as opposed to the United Nations on the International Day of Peace. This is a major deal to have him here. We also got a contact from Senator Merkley, and he said, I hear about the World Peace Plan, I want to learn about it. So we came out here, we met with him, had a session with him out in the World Peace Plan. All this has come together with the global movement, the Ashland Global Peace Conference, which is coming up. It's going to be fantastic. A couple of quick pieces about that. The focus is, you are the flame. This is about our own commitment to foster well-being, compassion, and care for others in our spheres of influence. We all have spheres of influence. Peace is not just an idea, it is a practice. World peace starts with our own personal commitment to peace, and we change the national chaos into positive narrative. It's changing the narrative, and we can do that locally. We are doing that. When everyone engages in personal practices, fostering well-being for all, this leads to world peace. At this conference, our state, city, and community leaders will inform the ambassador of the United Nations and the conference attendees how their personal commitment, how their personal commitment to foster well-being for all influences their leadership across the board. This is founded, the conference is founded on the 12 foundational values of the Ashland Coastal Peace Commission when we started. This has been a guidance, this has been a compass to help us make decisions as to where we go, our values based. We're asking everybody to be there holding these values for the time we're together and beyond. And we also had a special message from Senator Merkley. Jeff Label. So he sent this for this conference.
So Saturday, during the conference, this will be the message played.
In the beginning. By instead, we'll see subtitles in English.
as the text.
All right.
Okay, so thank you everyone, and I just want to take a moment to thank the City Council. As a full-time volunteer myself, I want to thank you all to put in your time, your dedication, and your care to hold the city together. So thank you.
And thank you. Questions? Comments? Thank you for coming tonight. We will see you this weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's still room at the table, so come on down. Thank you, dear.
You'll be in the hallway taking reservations.
That's right.
Okay. Next up is public forum. Mules, are you out there? Come on down. You're the next contestant.
There's no cameras tonight?
Sorry, Mules.
Oh, good.
You can always save it for next time. We give 15 minutes, so I guess you have up to 5 minutes.
Thank you.
Since you're the only one here tonight.
Oh, I don't need to even do this, huh? Oh, I can talk loud? Okay,
your
thank
time
you.
Is, Sergeant.
Peace. Oh, I really like that thing, peace. I was taught it is constructed. It is a construction, and I've heard this before. It isn't like the absence of fighting or war. It's a something that needs to be have a foundation and step by step created. And that's what a lot of government does. It's really cool. But it's a never-ending effort. But then we have climate change, and that ain't gonna be peace. They're looking like, and even the Army and everybody says, we can't handle it. We better solve it because we don't have enough people to go and fix it all. So there's to solve climate change, there's like 100 things to do, 200 things to do. Well, it's just being talk, and nobody knows what to do. So what I try to figure out, and I have arrived at a conclusion, what is one thing to do first, and then everything else will fall in place, and it won't get in the way of anything else. So I have arrived at solar panels, charging electric cars, okay. The one thing to do is to charge the cars and get ready for them. We know by 2025, that electric cars are gonna be the same price as gas cars, and by 30, there's a lot of towns they won't even allow new gas cars. And so this is happening. It's a happiness, really. Even considering all their batteries and making them and all that. It's a 10 times better least problem. So to charge them, that's level 2 charging in every new construction, home, building, everything. In the new, which seems to keep happening, and then maybe the when they're sold for the existing, but whatever. So last night I went to the Electric Vehicle Club meeting, and there were 3 couples that showed up out of nowhere in the county. And all 3 couples had 2 electric cars and the chargers for them. Brand new. I don't know how they got them. And there's going to be a parade of electric cars this Saturday. They're going to collect at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at the church without the steeple in their parking lot, right a couple blocks north of the plaza. And they're going to drive all together at noon to Medford and hang out there for a while and come back to the parking lot. So you could see brand new electric cars if you wanted to on Saturday. And I thought that was really amazing. Homes and buildings and streets last hundreds of years. And so when they're wired for level 2 charging right now, it's only going to be a few years because we want... There's all these people that want bikes. The heck with bikes. They're dangerous. Nobody came here in a bike. Except for stupid people like me. Poor people. So electric cars are the future for everybody. I want everybody to have a car because then you won't have to go to the doctor. So electric cars are happening. So we can make that code all new, have level 2 charging right now in the state, and everybody just says, please do it so we know what to do. They don't know what to do. The governor doesn't know what to do. Nobody, the code, the ODO, they don't know what to do. There's 100 things to do. So let's just get level 2 charging mandated right now, and they'll say, okay. We don't have to worry about the code or anybody. It's so simple. Get started. Yeah. You can teach them.
Thank you. Thank you.
Nice. You play your best. Let's see. The consent agenda is next. Does anybody wish to add anything from the consent agenda?
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, you can do that.
I wish to pull numbers 2 and 3.
2 and 3. Anybody want anything else?
Number 4, please.
2, 3, and 4 are no. 1 and 5 are feeling insulted. Well, we might as well start with number 2. It's been the subject of many emails and a very nice concerted effort by the Clay Street group. Good government. So take it away.
So Jackson County and Public Works, City of Ashland Public Works staff have been working together for a while to try to figure out how to improve that section of Middle Clay Street. As the city administrator explained earlier, it is under the jurisdictional control of Jackson County. Right now is a time to submit for competitive grant applications through the Rogue Valley Metropolitan Planning Organization. And Jackson County is willing to put forth an application for the full improvement of Clay Street to a city standard with the expectation that the City of Ashland take over jurisdictional control of it at the completion of the project. In my staff report, I kind of referenced one that occurred in 2015. Peachy Road up above Siskiyou Boulevard was the same type of process where the county received federal funding through the MPO for the improvement of Peachy Road. They improved Peachy Road to a city standard and then we took over jurisdictional control of that roadway. This would be a typical process similar to that. We're asking that the City Council, and Jackson County is asking that the City Council provide a letter of support for the grant application itself. And because of meeting schedules, it's a little off, but I'm taking the same request to the Transportation Commission on Thursday to ask the Transportation Commission to provide a letter of support as well. And then, as the administrator said, we will also combine all of the positive email and letters that we received to give to Jackson County to use in that application process. Like I said, it is a competitive process where all the local jurisdictions present their projects and they are ranked. Councilor Rosenthal is on the policy committee for the RVMPO, and he will be one of the people discussing these projects and getting the presentations on all the projects moving forward. And the expectation is, I'm not completely sure of the exact schedule for timing of when this will get through the MPO process, but the funding schedule itself is the 2022 to 2024 funding year. So usually you apply 3 years before they award the money, so you're ahead 3 years in the cycle. So the earliest for any sort of functional improvements would be after the 2022 start itself. And the overall project would require solicitation of engineering services to design the roadway, public outreach to make sure that we encompass all the needs of the residents adjacent to that roadway, and then the construction phase of the full improvement itself. And we're talking a few thousand feet of roadway that needs to be improved to local residential collector status.
Thank you, Scott. So obviously I'm on the MPO and assume the council's okay with me voting for this. But my question is this, if I lived on Clay Street or if I used it frequently, so what I'm hearing, what they would hear is that there may be an opportunity for the street to be improved sometime maybe in 2022, 2023, 2024. So, but it's really bad now. So my question is, what can be done now, and why do we have to wait? Why doesn't the county improve it before then, being that they have other funds and resources potentially available? So what they're telling, the county is telling us, is that, yeah, love to work with you, want to work with the City of Ashland to transfer this so they don't have to worry about it anymore after it's improved to our standards, but why can't they do it before 2020?
So they're making the same kind of prioritizations as the city would on improvements. And so I can't speculate for how the county would position themselves, but I can say they are probably looking at a prioritization of their county roads in the county itself and not within a city limit boundary as having a higher priority than, say, something that's within a city limit itself moving forward. And as far as what we could do right now, we can continue to work with Jackson County to see if they can do some more than just, say, pothole patching repairs on that roadway, as what they've done in the past. They're essentially doing the bare minimum of maintenance on that section of roadway. So we can continue to work with Jackson County to see if we can get any other functional improvements done or any sort of maintenance improvements on that roadway until such time as that they move forward with a full improvement.
What can you say? So how would citizen, to whom would they apply advocacy at the county level on this topic?
So that would be, the director of public works for the road department or the county engineer, John Vile, Mike Koontz, would be an appropriate point of contact to say they support improvement of this roadway.
Just one other comment on it is that I can't think, it would be hard for me to imagine another roadway or street within a city in the Rogue Valley that would have more people living along that stretch than Middle Clay. And for it to be somehow ranked in the county's priority list as a low priority, I would love to hear an explanation
of that. But obviously, the bottom line, just I'm for this, all for it, but I'm a little skeptical that something couldn't be done beforehand. Why do we have to wait? And there's no guarantee that there'll be funding for this at the MPO level, as the county, along with other cities, will be also putting in other applications. So that would be another question, is will this be the county's number one priority, or are they just giving us some lip service?
Perhaps Kelly is going to give us a strategy.
You know, I think the county has been working, like Scott said, the county and the city have been working together and collaborating on this. The county knows that this street is in poor condition. I think what the county would say is, if you want the road done faster, it is within your jurisdiction. So that's the issue, is the county has lots of roads within lots of cities' jurisdictions, and cities don't want to take those roads unless they're brought up to their standards, which is understandable. I think that us working together with the county is very, very positive. Because it's probably the way that funding could happen for this project. It may be the only way if the county doesn't want to come forward with additional resources, or we don't want it, or we don't have additional resources to come forward. So I think I'm really happy that we've been working with Jackson County to help them forward this project on. And it doesn't sound like there's any issue with Jackson County applying for this project with us. And so I think really one of the things is, you know, please write in, because the more positive input we have for this project, that will go some way, if not all the way, to making this project happen. So the MPO will be voting on it. And so the more support, the more local support that we have, the better.
When is the vote?
I don't have the end schedule. The project list will be that the applications are due by September 30th, and then they are ranked by the criteria by the MPO staff, and then there are rounds of presentations that go to the Technical Advisory Committee, the Public Advisory Committee, and then the Policy Committee, and then everyone, those committees, make a recommendation to the policy committee, and then the policy committee does the final ranking. That usually takes 4 to 6 months overall to get through that process.
Would it be possible to bookmark this and come back with an update late October or somewhere in October to tell us how things went? Does this any good if we can keep track of this one, mm-hmm. and if there are any other options? We're going to give you a chance in just a little bit, and if there are any other options that we can think of between now and then. Mm-hmm.
Follow up. I'm sorry, it's your turn.
Oh, I just had a question. If we do that, does it slow it down even more, though? Because I echo Councilor Rosenthal's concern.
I'm not looking to slow it down.
I'm just asking, would it, if we do that, would it slow it down?
No. Okay. I mean, we can just give an update.
Okay. So I have a question about this. So the grant cycle is for 2022 to 2024, but the recommendations for funding are this year, potentially in
2020.
Early 2020. So what if the grant was accepted and recommended for funding by the MPO, would it be possible for the city to front the funding to do the project before 2022 and be reimbursed by the other fund source when those funds are released by government? So could the city use its resources to loan the process, the funds needed to do it before 2022, 23, or 24?
So we have done a process in the past where we've called it a reimbursement resolution, where the council is authorized spending against the project to be reimbursed at a later date based on a financing mechanism. I think that is a potential, but that has been primarily and only used for the engineering phase of it, not the construction phase of it. So that was something I think we should speak with legal counsel and the city administrator about, is the potential. There's a base mechanism I know we've used previously.
Bring us our options as far as what, where we're at once the decision making part is done, and what is it we can do at that point to move this forward.
This Middle Clay has been a scab on this town for decades, and it almost appears in the past that it's like the Middle East. It's like this insoluble thing that we can't get our arms around. And I love the idea that we might be close to something, and I love the creative thinking that it might be able to kick this thing over the edge, and you know, and get this going. I love the passion and the respect with which all these folks wrote in support of this, particularly the fact of very robust. An active elementary school is down there with these kids trying to ride bikes along there. And you know, we went to the city, we went trails, we went kids outside and all this thing. And going down Middle Clay is like taking your life in your hands. And I would love to see this council be creative on that and really try to kick this forward.
Just quickly, I feel the need to just disclose that I live about a block away from Clay Street. And it has occurred to me that if this, when this project comes through, it might influence property values across our neighborhood. And I've been advised by council that, that there is not even really a potential conflict of interest because of the particulars of this project, but I just wanted to let folks know that that is in fact the case, that I do live close to where this would be, potentially be impacted.
I do have someone who signed up to come speak to us, and I think she's excited to come up.
I'm loving the discussion.
Yeah. Sarah Walker, would you come on up and share your thoughts with us?
Well, I just wrote a little piece and it only takes 2 minutes. So hello, that's fine. My name's Sarah Walker and I've enjoyed living in South Ashland for 25 years. Just the last 4 years, almost 5 years, I've lived just half a block from Clay Street on Blackberry Lane. First, I wanted to thank Paula Brown and Scott Fleury for keeping me abreast of what was happening with Middle Clay Street as far as the discussions. And hearing that the county has an opportunity to get grant money to improve Clay Street is really exciting, even though it looks like it may be way down the road. Living in South Ashland, I know there are several streets that need improving, like May and Jacqueline, but Middle Clay is the longest and the most used unimproved street in the designated transit triangle, which is an area the Planning Commission has targeted to create more affordable residential housing, and I guess you all know about the transit triangle. For the last 30 years, Middle Clay has been a narrow, rough, potholed stretch between Siskiyou and Astro Street. Drivers slalom down Clay, trying to dodge the potholes, only to hit the jagged road edges and uneven surface. Beware your front end alignment or your bike wheels. In fact, I went around and got a lot of signatures, which I would like to have recorded into the meeting minutes. And one of the people that signed said that he had actually hit a pothole on his bike and he almost broke his neck when he got thrown off. So we have a lot of residents and children that need to have a sidewalk. We have the Siskiyou School there at the bottom of Clay Street. So these kids ride bikes and they walk. And developers that are interested in this transit triangle surely we'll be more inclined to take a good look at properties around there if Clay Street is improved. Anyway, my last paragraph. I have collected a few pages of signatures of Ashland residents who agree Middle Clay Street should be improved, and we all want to encourage you to produce a letter to go with the county's application for grant money. And please, let's get it done sooner than 2024. It's a mess. I watched them repair that. You know, they bring little
pots of concrete and stuff in the potholes, and then the potholes get bigger. It's a mess.
Thank you. And great use of the transit triangle overlay on that as well. Good.
Yes.
That was nicely done. Thank you.
Well, and Clay Street is the longest unimproved street in the transit triangle.
I'm sensing that there's a lot of support for this idea.
May I give these to somebody?
Yes. Up here as well.
Thank you so much.
So, are you sitting there because the next one's yours as well? Number three?
I think I'm pro-temping for the Honorable Director Brown on this one. Yes. You know, I just had a question. I'm all for the contract approval. What was not in the AIC, I just want to double check to bring it forward. So the process, when would it start? What type of closure would it have on Oak Street, and for how long, and what can people expect to happen?
So we're looking at replacing and upgrading about 2,700 feet of water line, starting at the Nevada Street intersection with Oak Street, terminating at the wastewater treatment plant. The overall expectation is to have the project done in about a month, 4 weeks. We're looking at starting as soon as contracts are approved. We would like to see the work completed in October, and Oak Street paved back before the end of paving season, which is generally mid-November. For construction impacts expectations, they will be digging a trench down Oak Street, so there will be traffic control in place, and they will be flagging around the work zone, so expect workers in that area, and then flag control and around the work zone, and then there will be paving back a half lane of Oak Street as well. So during that process, it'll be the same. There'll be flaggers in place and traffic control devices in place where they will flag you around the roadway while it's getting paved. Like I said, I'm expecting the project to last about 4 weeks overall and wrap up hopefully by the end of October if we can get it on the ground within the next couple weeks. And that's the contractor expectation as well. Thank you.
Any other questions? Are you up here for number four as well?
I'll pass.
You're off the hot seat.
Are you number four, or is Councilor Jensen number four? I'm going to defer to the city manager.
So I asked, Chris asked me to have this pulled because there were some dates that he wanted changed on the public notice, the approval of a special procurement. And I just wanted to make sure you knew that those dates were changed. So if you were looking at it on your computer, it's form number 9, page 4 of 4.
The first date of publication on that date would then read September 18th, tomorrow, after the approval will be posted on the city's website. The approval is taking place today, the 17th, which is the next date, and the last one that would need to be changed is the 7-day protest period will expire at 5 p.m. on September 24th, 2019. Apologize for the mistake.
Change is noted. Can that be encompassed in one motion? Consent agenda, or do we have to separate them?
We don't need a separate motion.
Can I have a motion on the consent agenda?
I move approval of consent agenda items 1 through 5.
Second.
Okay. Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Yeah. You'll have a letter out and let the Clay Street folks know that they will be called. So we don't have any public hearings tonight. We're unfinished business. We're doing miscellaneous business. We're down to ordinances, resolutions, and contracts. Who is going to load up number 1 there?
has talked in the past about amending amending the start and end times for council meetings. And this kind of, the end time, I should say. And this kind of came about because we had a situation where we had a motion, there was discussion of the motion, and then the end time came, and we all dispersed. And so there was talk about kind of amending that and giving the council the ability that at 10:30, the council could go, if you had a motion on the table, the council could then go longer until about 10:45, which, and then there would be a call for the question, basically. In addition, at the last meeting, we talked about amending the time, the start time, and one counselor talked about that. But just to be efficient, I kind of put them all together instead of having to bring back another ordinance change, because those do take a little while. If the council wanted to amend the start time and go from 7 p.m. to 6 p.m., if that was the case, then that would change the end time from 10:30 to 9:30. And so that is before you tonight.
Quick question. If we, in the event that we have executive session before, those would start at 5:30. Is that correct?
Yes, or we could have them after. I mean, we could have them before or after. I think in the council rules, it was...
Well, we were trying to have them on the study session nights.
Yeah.
But it's, occasionally that doesn't work, and we have to do it on a business meeting night. But and we could do it either way. I mean, we have done it both ways, actually, in the past, just depending on the counselor's schedule.
I'm all for it for my personal life. I'd love to get out of here earlier. I guess I'm just wondering what the feeling is about public participation. Is anybody worried that people won't be able to get here by 6, or changing it, you know, after it's been 7 for a period of time? How long have we been doing this at 7?
As long as I've been around, but much longer than that, I'm sure.
So that's my only concern. I'm just interested in the feeling of people.
Can I just address that just really quick? One of the things, historically, it's been, well, people need to get home and they need to eat dinner. And it's almost assumed like someone's cooking and someone is coming home to eat dinner. And that isn't so much the case anymore. And so we had talked about it from a staff perspective, because we talked about this too, would that hinder public involvement? And I think we felt that it wouldn't, but it's you know, it's really a thing.
You're exactly correct. Kelly, this is an anachronism. The 7 o'clock thing has been around forever, and it goes back to the whole we'll come home and have dinner with the kids and give the husband a chance to relax, and the husband goes out. I mean, it's really an ancient practice. From my perspective, I think it's going to enhance city involvement. There have been, and I suspect there's some folks here, that you intend to go to a meeting and then come 6 o'clock and then 6:15 and then 7 rolls around, and sometimes your enthusiasm for those meetings wane by 7 o'clock. I think 6 o'clock, I would support this 100%. I think it's a good thing. I think it's going to enhance involvement, and let's go. I'm ready to make a motion.
I'm just going to say that I like the idea too. It'll help those of us that can't see it work past 9:30. Anyway, that was a joke. It didn't go very well. So for some reason, the motion.
I move to approve ordinance number 3181, changing the start time of council business meetings to 6 p.m. and changing the end time to 9:30 p.m. unless a motion or any amendment to the motion has been made and seconded. Then deliberation on the motion could continue to 9:40 p.m., at which time the motion would be voted on.
We have a second.
Second.
Would you like to speak to it?
I already have.
We can do anything we want tonight because no one's recording this.
Okay.
Councilor Graham, you're next.
You know, I think it may create some pressure points for me, but I think that the overall benefit in terms of public participation, I think, is there, especially because the longer these meetings drag on at night, I think the more likely we are to lose participation. And so I'm hopeful that we can keep most of our executive sessions to the study session nights, mm-hmm. and then I think I can make that. That should be a blue.
I have a question about the motion, and it's probably for city attorney. So I just want to clarify that the hard stop at 9:40 that would require a vote, is that defensible? And what happens if the presiding officer of the meeting were to not want a vote at 9:40? The person running the meeting, would it be possible for the mayor, whomever he or she may be, to run the meeting in such a way that could not occur?
Well, no, under the wording of this change, at 9:40, the motion has to be voted on. It doesn't require a motion to end debate. It moves right to a vote.
Okay, and the follow-up to that is there famously was a councilor who, when it came in years past, came to a vote, wouldn't register a vote. So would there be, as I recall, I think there is something in the code now that would register that is no vote at all?
That's right. If a councilor refuses to vote, it's shown as a no vote.
Oh, it's a no vote.
Yes.
Okay.
Under our rules, you're not allowed to.
Of potential shenanigans on this change. So I have a clear understanding.
Yeah, I think in some ways this reduces the chances of shenanigans.
Okay. But you're good at thinking those things through.
Yeah. Well, in order to parse that out further, so at 9:40, somebody wouldn't have to call for the question. The presiding officer, abiding by the city ordinance, would say, let's vote.
And remembering you voted to extend at 9:30, so you're already, you've reached 9:30, you voted to amend it.
No, you don't have to vote to extend either. If a motion is on the floor, then it automatically is extended to 9:40 or as late as 9:40, and then at 9:40, automatically it's extended.
But we need to be cognizant at that moment of the fact that we're exceeding 9:30, we're into that 10 minutes, we need to wrap and vote. So,
what if there's a robust back and forth going on at that time, and it really isn't engaging and informative? And
as mentioned, it can still be tabled.
Okay.
Yes, could
before
be.
Before 9:40,
you can make the motion to table it for further discussion at the next meeting.
I guess
you
can dance.
Are we ready to vote? Is this a roll call? I want it to be a roll call. Roll call, please.
Graham?
Yes.
Akins?
Yes.
Rosenthal?
Yes.
Jensen?
Yes.
Slattery?
Yes. Okay. Down to the last item.
Okay, so I had presented a resolution to the City Council for the biennial budget goals, basically, that broke down your priorities, basically, into essential services and value services, based on your time creating these. And then I included with that was these additions, C, D, E, and F, and they had a lot of text that I added with them. And what the council concluded was that you didn't want that text because you wanted to have a strategic planning this year, and you wanted to sort of fill in that text in a more thorough way, or change these if you wanted to, or reprioritize them. So that being said, I was asked by a counselor, would it be possible to include the headings, which would really help staff, because one of the things in a council communication is putting council goals and how the things we're doing are meeting those goals. And when you just have a list of essential and value services, it doesn't translate very well into those goals for the projects that we're working on. So what I did was brought forward the wording, the exact wording that you had, at least that I had in my documents, of the headings. So utilize city resources as leverage to develop and or enhance prioritize value services, develop current and long-term budgetary resiliency. During the 2019-2021 biennium, analyze various departments' programs with the goal of gaining efficiencies, reducing costs, and improving city services, and enhance and improve transparency and communication. So I wanted to bring those headings forward to you, given that you did create them, but just omit the text that would accompany it.
I have a motion.
Please.
I move to amend resolution number 2019-27 in the following ways. Under B, remove the phrase, as the 2019-2021 biennial budget is prepared. Remove number C, and remove the phrase, during the 2019-2021 biennium, from E, so that it reads, analyze city departments / programs to gain efficiencies, reduce costs, and improve city services.
Second.
The language adjustments are simply to, because we've already identified that this isn't just for the biennial budget time. And then in terms of number C, taking C out, C is duplicates in many ways what we write in B. It's kind of the heading for B, I think, that's just somehow made it in as its own line. So this is just nothing in terms of the content, but really just some editing for language.
Agreed.
Any other discussion, or can we vote? Can we vote?
Jensen?
Yes.
Rosenthal?
Yes.
Slattery?
Yes.
Graham?
Yes.
Akins?
Yes.
So, we have a couple more items that I'd like to cover tonight, everybody.
Oh, we need to do that.
The look on Kelly's face.